And welcome everyone to another episode of All Things Trek, where we are not talking about Star Trek Into Darkness. I'm Aaron.
I'm Grace.
Unfortunately, David couldn't be here today, and you may have noticed by now that this is also another pre-recorded show. This is our second pre-recorded show in a row, and we're very sorry for that. We'll be back live next week. There was something going on this weekend that Grace needed to go to. Grace, what was that again?
Viking Fest.
Viking Fest. Okay, so this show is pre-recorded in the name of Viking Fest.
It's a festival of Vikings.
So I hope you are all happy about that.
They have canoe jousting. How can I miss that?
They have canoe jousting?
Yeah, they
Oh.
joust on canoes.
Hmm.
Yeah? Yeah?
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Pretty incredible, right?
Yeah, okay. Well, canoe jousting. Also, I assume you haven't actually seen Star Trek Into Darkness yet.
Nope.
All right. Well, hopefully you'll have seen it by next week, because
Well, that's the plan.
the idea is that, I didn't want to just talk about it today, because I figure most people aren't going to have heard it, excuse me,
Yeah.
aren't going to have seen it yet, and it's not, most of the stuff I want to say is really context sensitive.
Of course.
So hopefully by next week you'll have had time to see it. If you haven't, you may want to just skip that episode, come back to it later if you're super, into catching up on all the episodes and want to know our opinions.
We'll just put like spoiler tags on the episode descriptions or what have you.
By spoiler tags, I mean I will yell spoiler really loudly at the start of the show.
Spoiler! Spoiler!
That is just something I'm going to do. Apparently, last episode, like the one we recorded before the Vic Mignogna interview, I said supposedly like 12 times in 5 minutes. It was ridiculous. I was listening, I was like, supposedly, supposedly. I was like, oh, come on, stop saying that. I kept saying it. I was just,
Oh, Oren.
it was bad. It was pretty bad.
We need to just start having a meter now. Is that something we can do since we're going to be having this pre-recorded? Can we edit in like a supposedly counter?
I'm not convinced I want to do that. That sounds like work. But that's okay. So I actually have seen it, but I'm not going to say anything more about it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sorry, go ahead, Grace.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So one thing I did want to talk about before we really go into anything else, like no, before we get to emails or the topic, and this is vaguely Star Trek related. I wanted to talk about first contact with actual aliens.
Ooh.
Because, and this is something that I've been thinking about a lot, and I think about it on and off, but recently I was thinking about it a lot because. Okay, hang on, sorry, I was just making sure that the Skype recorder was actually recording. I just
Is
realized.
it?
Yeah, it is, it's fine. But sometimes I have to double check. Okay, so, but
I
anyway,
keep
SF Debris just did his review of First Contact, the episode, not the movie. And with it, he had a longer, video that was discussing the possibility of first contact in real life. And he cited several people, including Stephen Hawking's, kind of surprisingly.
Yeah, well, he's got his theories about first contact, so.
He does. I was surprised to see them that written, like I was surprised to see them like that. But these people, several people have indicated that maybe if there is alien life out there and it is intelligent enough to build spaceships, maybe we shouldn't be trying to find it.
Yeah, wasn't that what Hawking was saying?
That is basically what Hawking said. There was a lot of and there was a lot more. He was giving like a lecture, I think, and he said a lot more than that, but he mentioned that, and that was like the that had aliens in it, so that made the story sexy, so everyone was talking about it.
Yeah, that's how it got all over the news. So, a few years ago when he actually gave said
Yeah.
talk.
And like I listened I looked at what he said, and it seemed, honestly, I mean, obviously, he's a lot smarter than me, but
Really?
it seemed a little bit far-fetched. His theory of them, he proposed this theory that I'm
It's
calling the.
theoretical physics, so far-fetched is kind of his thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. He proposed the theory that I'm calling the Independence Day theory, which
Yeah.
is that a potential alien race may have used up all the resources in their system and are now like nomadic, locusts basically. They come to your system and use up everything and leave.
They're gonna come, they're gonna possess Brett Spiner to freak us out, and then there's
Yeah.
gonna be a lot of fighting.
And that's the plot of Independence Day. Like, straight up, that is the plot of Independence Day. And I just find the idea a little bit ridiculous because what do we have on Earth that they couldn't get raw materials wise from any other planetary body that doesn't have a bunch of people with nukes living on it.
Water.
There's lots of water in other places, and like they'd have to be really good at recycling water if they were building like intergalactic spaceships.
Fair enough, fair enough.
I mean, like you
We
could.
just want to think we're special, though, Oren. We're special enough that people would want to invade us.
I guess. Now, when I said water, I meant there is frozen water on other places in our solar system. There isn't liquid water, but I'm pretty sure that, again, we're taking the idea that they are a giant interstellar fleet. I don't think digging for that water and melting it would be a problem for them.
We still have the monopoly on mosquitoes, though.
I suppose. Maybe they.
They're an endangered species, don't you know?
I guess maybe they would want to add to their dietary supplement. Nice Lilo and Stitch reference, by the way.
I try, I try.
And it seems so. I'll admit that that idea seems a little far-fetched to me. I have a hard time believing that we would have anything that these incredibly advanced aliens would want, and that they couldn't get more easily somewhere else in terms of raw materials and
We're still,
resources.
obviously, we're still talking theoretically, though. We're talking about why they would want to make first contact. I think one of the big worries about a first contact scenario is how we as humans would react in a first contact scenario and how we would futz that up.
Sure. Now
Yeah.
there is plenty of potential for humans.
The Mars attacks scenario, if you will.
Yeah, although I'm pretty sure that the
Where they
implication of
go is
Mars.
actually a sign of war where they come from.
I'm pretty sure the implication of Mars attacks was not that they came in peace until someone threw a dove. I'm pretty sure they just hate birds
Just let me have this, Oren. Let me have this.
and that they were going to invade anyway. Not to say that there's a lot of concrete plot going on in Mars Attacks, which is a very fun movie. I enjoy it a lot.
You don't watch it for the plot, you watch it for the goofiness.
Yeah, because it's a comedy, right? It's meant to be a sort of a spoof on Independence Day.
Well, that's, yeah. And just, alien invasion movies of the 50s and all that.
Yeah, totally.
You could see a chandelier dropped on Glenn Close, so it's pretty good.
Do you know?
Yeah!
I mainly remember the alien woman biting off somebody's finger and the bad music killing the aliens. I remember those two things. It's been a while since I've seen Mars Attacks. Well, that was interesting.
Yeah, the internet just kind of died for a minute there.
Couple of minutes, actually, but since
Yeah,
this is the
this is
magic.
not coming back.
This is the magic of a pre-recorded show. I have fixed everything. So if we,
Using digital technology, it'll be as like it never happened.
I guess Audacity is digital
Yeah.
in the technical terms.
It's on a computer, that makes it digital, right?
Right. So we just like sort of were discussing Mars Attacks, and
Yeah.
I had mentioned earlier that I certainly agree that we could very easily, as humans, completely bumble a first contact procedure because we are
We could thread the
unsurpassed in our ability to bumble things.
internet.
Like,
Yeah.
no doubt, no question about that there. But the thing
The ozone layer, the state of our oceans. Look at what we can't. Just think, imagine what we could mess up given a larger scale.
man, just look at the state of my outfit.
I'm kind of grateful that we're talking via Skype, so I don't have to.
So, I mean,
Oh,
I
police.
certainly understand that we could potentially mess up a first contact situation. That's possible. I'd like to think that any aliens that are coming to meet us are also thinking that and would be a little bit more, understanding, because they would be like, "Oh God, we might mess up this first contact." We
Yeah.
sh but who knows? That we can't say whether or not that's the thing. The reason why that I was a little bit put off by the SF Debris video was that at the end, he seemed to be advocating a little bit for the idea that we maybe don't want to answer a proverbial phone call by aliens because we don't know if their intentions would be hostile or not.
Well, we wouldn't.
It's
We wouldn't really have any wider context to compare to, would we?
Well, and that's true to an extent. I actually think the arguments for them not being hostile are much stronger than the arguments for them being hostile. It's true. We don't know for sure, though. I will definitely grant that.
Well, just think of the many, many examples we have of first contact among people of different nations on Earth.
True.
How well that usually goes.
This is fact. That, and I understand, and I'm Stephen Hawking's in fact made that analogy in his explanation. Personally, I feel that it's a slightly different situation going on here. I admire, or excuse me, I subscribe to the theory that if a species has managed to get its act together well enough to be sending out serious deep space exploration missions, then they've already passed the nuclear stage, right? Which means they had the opportunity to annihilate themselves, and they didn't. They passed that stage somehow. Which would suggest to me that they would have at least gotten over some, to some extent, the, to some extent, they would have gotten over the, whatchamacallit, the need to, to conquest and control. And maybe that's not true. I think it was Morgan Freeman who, when asked about this, said that he didn't think that space was populated by Northern Europeans. Which
He's got a point.
is hardly to say that Northern Europeans are the only people who have ever oppressed anybody. But
No, but it's just further proof that Morgan Freeman is just all of us is superior.
he is really cool. In that same interview, he talked about he's trying to get a movie made of Encounter at Rama, which I am so excited about. Have you read that book?
Yeah.
That book is
No,
so.
I don't.
Say what?
I don't. I have no idea what you're talking about, so.
Don't lie to me, Grace. Don't.
I'm intrigued, yet I'm excited just because you are.
Don't joke with me about this. Okay, so in.
No joke, no joke.
Okay, so Encounter with Rama is a really, really good hard sci-fi novel written by Arthur C. Clarke, I want to say.
What makes it hard sci-fi?
Well, it's very based in real existing technology. It's like near-ish future. Like we have spaceships, and we have we can go around in the system, but we don't have FTL. It still takes a really long time to get from Earth to Pluto, for example. But we can get
Yeah.
from like, Earth to Mercury
Why
or
would we want to get to Pluto?
because we want to ask it if it's a planet or not. I don't know. Don't snark.
Will never not snark.
But like we whatchamacallit? So it's near sci-fi, or it's near future sci-fi, and the plot revolves around an alien object that is determined to be of artificial origin flying into the solar system and the ship that's sent out to meet it.
Ooh.
And it is really, really good and completely not what you expect it to be. And minor spoilers, you expect it to be like an alien situation or something where it's like, now we have to
Yeah.
bust out the guns and shoot a bunch of mad aliens, but that is not what it is, even a little bit. It's really good. And Morgan Freeman is apparently a huge fan of that book, and he has the movie rights, and he wants to make it, and he wants to play the captain of the ship that makes contact with Rama, which is what they name this weird device.
Morgan Freeman, why are you so
I
cool?
know. And I will watch that movie. My first instinct when I heard that was, isn't he a little bit old for that role? But
No,
I don't
no.
care. I've given up. I've decided that I don't care. He's Morgan
Morgan
Freeman. He
Freeman
can
would never be too old.
say what?
He's God. He does what he wants.
Apparently, if Morgan Freeman wants to be a space captain, I will not stand in his way. But all right,
When
so.
they were making Unleashed, Morgan Freeman just said, "I think my character should be blind," and it was done.
Really?
True story. Yeah. That was Morgan Freeman's idea entirely.
That's cool.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, and
I've been watching that movie for like the past 2 days on and off, so.
he shouldn't really have any problems getting the movie made with the entire budget of Wayne Industries behind him. So,
Oh, goodness, no.
see, you can make Morgan Freeman references. I can make Morgan Freeman references. Ugh.
Well played, good sir.
Okay, so, but the original point that I was making was somewhere. Okay.
There was a
The
point
point.
around here somewhere.
So back to the point, back to the actual point. There is a distinct possibility that the aliens could be hostile. I don't personally believe they would be, but I don't pretend to know everything there is to know about aliens. And there's no way we could know for sure, right? But the reason I find the concept a little bit silly that if we receive an alien signal, we shouldn't respond to it, is we already have a 100 light year, roughly, diameter sphere of radio transmissions around our planet that we've been sending
That's
out.
true, yeah.
And those pretty much pinpoint our exact position and that we are here and, that we live on Earth.
Also, they're like broadcasting out our TV frequencies and stuff, aren't they? They're like getting I Love Lucy reruns over on Neptune or
There's
something.
a really funny, it's much farther than that, actually. There's a very funny little graph on that XKCD did.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking
Yeah, that
of.
showed all what the ver what stage of our television transmissions various stars are at and what they were getting. So if we didn't want aliens to know we were here, like that ship has sailed. I feel like if we would have to go back in time and tell the first people building the radio, nuh-uh, cut that out.
It'd be great if they all showed up and they thought we were all still in the 1950s mentality and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean that would be funny. I would really like they said like the woman said in the at the episode First Contact. I'd hate to think how they would judge us
Yeah.
based on our popular entertainment.
Exactly.
Not to say that the judgment might not be accurate, but I would be embarrassed.
I'm just imagining they all come and it's like in Contact where they're like, we'll take the form of something that doesn't frighten you. Army of Lucille Balls come down off the spaceship.
Ah.
Just going, yeah!
No, I'm sorry, aliens. I didn't mean to send you reruns of Here Comes Honey Boo Boo. That wasn't my choice. Please don't destroy me.
Army of Snooky Clones will come to greet us.
So
Good grief, that's terrifying.
the reason I brought this up,
Why would I joke about
because you're
that?
a terrible person, Grace. We know that already.
Duh.
So the reason I wanted to bring this up was that I haven't seen anyone else bring it up in the argument. Like, I looked up some debates on this, and the question has always revolved around would the aliens be hostile or not? Which is, something that we can debate the points back and forth, but we don't really have any way of knowing for sure. But the real question I think I can ask is it's not should we make contacts with the aliens? It's what we would do when that happens. It's not an if question, it's a when question.
You'd think by this point we'd have some kind of theoretical plan.
I'm sure we do. I think the UN has a theoretical plan. I'm sure the US government has a theoretical plan. So,
We're gonna find out years from now that Korea has one
yeah.
of their own to compete with ours.
It's probably not, super well developed. It was probably not put together by the people's, most qualified to do the job, but I'm sure one exists.
It involves a pizza party.
Probably. Introducing them to the glory of meat lovers. So, that's all right. So that's just I thought that was interesting, and I wanted to bring it up because it just seemed kind of weird that everyone is debating this on a philosophical axis when I really think it's more of a practical issue of we don't have a choice. Unless the aliens are beaming are beaming information to us via quantum entanglement from half a galaxy away, which we would have no way of receiving. They're gonna know we're here. Like they don't, unless we could maybe start, we could fool them. We could put out a bunch of like news broadcasts about nuclear war, and be like, if oh, it's too bad we wiped ourselves out with nukes. If there are any aliens
We
watching
could pull an Orson Welles and just play War of the Worlds on a galactic-wide
if
frequency.
there are any aliens watching this, you totally shouldn't come to Earth. It's hella irradiated. Which, I mean, I don't know, maybe the aliens will fall for that, but then we'd have to stop any kind of wireless radio broadcasting.
Well, I don't think we can do that anymore.
Don't
That
think so either.
we're beyond the point of that being a possibility.
So, yeah, the so that's
But it's one of those things with the first contact, we don't know what to expect, so all we can expect is the unexpected.
Right. And I understand.
Unless I do have one idea.
Yeah.
Warp drive capable culture says what?
Oh, we should have a warp core. We should have a warp drive.
Now just say what, Oren?
What?
There you go, we're worthy now.
Oh.
Yay!
Well, right. well, NASA is kind of working on one of those. Now, were you here when we were talking about that? The kind of neat looking little warp ring ship that NASA is experimenting with. Not an
No,
actual
I don't think
ship. They're
so.
working on building like a table sized version of it to see if they can use the principle to accelerate a particle to go faster than light.
Well, it's always good to have test things out. I mean, that's been some of the big problems with NASA in the past, hasn't it? They will take a skin of their teeth success and mark that up as a full success. And that's how you get space shuttle crashes.
Well,
I was reading about it in my statistics textbook.
I don't know if I would describe the shuttle accidents quite like that. From what I understand, I mean, Challenger was just a, it was a combination of a construction company that got greedy and like decided to cut costs, and then combined with the fact that when the engineers who knew there was a problem tried to warn NASA, there wasn't really anybody they could warn, is kind of what it came down to. Like, there was no one whose job it was to say, we have to stop the launch, there's a terrible thing that's about to happen. Because, like, my mom is friends with one of the engineers who tried to report on that.
Really?
Yeah.
But, I did not know that.
Yeah, and she's talked to him about it several times. And basically, when they tried to talk to NASA, this is my recollection of the story. Don't take my word for it. Please do this research if you're interested, to the listeners. But when they tried to contact NASA, they met with a bunch of people who were like, well, we have to talk to somebody else. And meanwhile, you know, while the shuttle was being brought out to the launch bay, or to the launch pad, and it was like, you know, I mean, being, those engineers were in a terrible situation where they were like, you guys can't launch. And basically, you know, they couldn't find anyone with the authority to listen to them.
Oh, jeez.
So that was...
It's been bureaucracy, huh?
Yeah, that was a failure of bureaucracy.
Your mom just knows everyone.
My mom knows a lot of people. And then as I understand it, the problem with Columbia was just an issue of the space shuttle is just getting old.
Yeah.
Like, it was a very, you know, it was a revolutionary vehicle.
They're still prototypes still, aren't they?
Say what?
They're still working off of their old prototype, aren't they?
Well, not anymore. They're grounded now. The space shuttle's been retired. But, like, the Columbia was the first space shuttle that was built other than the Enterprise prototype that was never designed to actually go into space. And, you know, there's just, whenever you have a space vessel that's that old, there's the potential for problems. They actually had the same problem happen on the Discovery, as I understand it, when it went up after Columbia, but because they knew what to look for, they were able to fix it. So, I don't know. Those are both very complicated events, and I've given, like, the world's worst summary of them. So, I definitely recommend people who are interested to check them out, for themselves, because I...
To be fair, I'm pretty sure they don't listen to this podcast for actual history.
Probably not.
No.
Which is a good decision on their part, I think.
Yeah, if they did, I'd kind of feel sorry for them.
All right, okay. So, I feel like it's time to get into the emails, unless you have more stuff you want to say on First Contact.
Not really, no.
Okay. I just needed to get that out of my system. I was just like, why is nobody talking about this? Okay, so our first email is from Data Logan.
Yeah.
And the title is Requiem for Methuselah is pretty awesome. And I assume this is him commenting on the fact that we spent like a good fourth of our interview with Vic talking about Requiem for Methuselah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and he says, I've always really enjoyed this episode, despite some minor flaws. The plague of the week that affects everyone on the crew, except the big three, and can only be cured one way, and the two impossibly powerful Flint. The idea of an immortal man amongst humans is very compelling. The biggest problem with this take is that it feels a little ridiculous that Flint could have been so many famous people. King Solomon, Alexander the Great, Merlin, Leonardo da Vinci, Johannes Brahms. Mm-hmm. Although I am more okay with him having known many famous people. I think the writer, Jeremy Bigsby, did much better with the...
Jerome Bigsby! My man!
Did I say Jeremy? Jerome.
Yeah, you did. And remember, Jerome Bigsby was who I was trying to push for a topic later on.
Oh, were you now? Oh, right. Yeah, you were. Well, we can come back to this. We can come back to him, Mr. Bigsby.
I can talk about Bigsby all day, so...
All right. Well, I think the writer Jerome Bigsby did much better with the immortal idea in The Man from Earth. The immortal character in that story admits he's not particularly smart, just learns from others. He was lucky to be around some great learned men throughout the ages, but never was one of the great men himself. With one significant exception, that immortal was always in the background and never famous. Great work slash play slash movie slash idea, Bigsby.
Bixby was an idea, dude. You gotta give him that.
I didn't much care for The Man from Earth. Have you seen it?
No, but I'm familiar with a bunch of Bixby's other work, so
Yeah,
I count myself as a fan.
I know other people liked it. I think Bixby's a good writer. The Man from Earth was very strange, because they spent like it really felt more like a series of research notes than a story. And like the I didn't understand the main character's motivation, like especially at the end when he kind of goes off to romance this lady under very creepy circumstances. I did not much care for it. I'll avoid spoiling it for now. Maybe when we get into our actual Bixby conversation, we can have a spoiler episode of it. Anyway, the email continues. The immortal character continued on in Star Trek novels. He's talking about Flint. He had fooled McCoy into thinking he was dying, but actually was not. In fact, he played a significant role in the recent Cold Equations trilogy, and in the great novel Federation by Judith and Garfield Reeves Stevens. Okay, Judith and Garfield Reeves Stevens. So that's a married couple with a hyphenated last name. Yeah,
Yeah.
got it. Rainier?
Whatever works.
Say what?
Whatever works for you.
I was just confused. I didn't quite know how to read the name.
Just keep going.
Raina Capeck is an interesting character in her own right, the sentient, logical android learning about emotions 100 years before Data on TNG. As for the last scene, where Spock apparently mind melds with Kirk to help him forget, or excuse me, to help him forget about Raina, I have significant problems with the scene. I guess it's interesting that Spock cares about his friend Kirk and wants to do something to help, but erasing his memory without permission? Doesn't Kirk need his pain? Doesn't it make him who he is? You know, Data Logan, maybe I should disqualify this email right now for a Star Trek V reference. I'm sorry. You're making good points, man, but I don't know if I can keep reading something after it references the final frontier.
Keep going.
It's one thing for Kirk and McCoy to say he wishes he could forget, but that doesn't actually mean he wants to. Spock crossed a big line there. The issue is addressed in the good, not great novel, The City of.
The cry of only of the onlys.
Sorry, I completely misread that. The Cry of the Onlys by Judy Klass, which is also a sequel to the TOS episode Miri. Why on earth would you want a sequel to Miri? Ugh.
Because they can.
Ugh.
Because they can.
Sincerely, Data Logan. By the way, Peter David had another immortal character appear in a lot of his New Frontier novels. She's a woman who looks a lot like Laxana Troy and may have spent part of her life pretending to be Number One and slash or Nurse Chapel, among others.
Intriguing.
Yeah, that's. Okay, all right. So, talking about. Sorry, my eyes are burning up for some reason, but that's okay. This is podcasting. I don't need my eyes to see.
I'll need to read the damn emails.
I'm done reading the emails. Our second email doesn't need to be read, and you will see why. So I rewatched Requiem for Methuselah, and it's pretty good. Like, I was a little bit put off by some parts in it that are more than a little silly, like how Kirk just cannot, keep his eyes and hands off this woman who he has just met while the rest of his crew is dying. It's like, come on.
Priorities. Kirk has
Apparently,
priorities.
Kirk has priorities, and I'm just like.
All of which are Kirk related, I guess.
I mean, I'm just saying, I have met some fine-looking women in my time, but I have never met one who was so fine-looking that without even knowing anything about her, I just couldn't concentrate on anything else. It's just like, I've met some who have been like, oh, that's a very pretty lady, but I've never met anyone who would distract me to the point of being like, I have forgotten that all of my friends are dying. So that was a little silly. And there's a really hilarious part where Kirk, like, sort of almost kind of randomly declares to Raina that you love me, not him. And it's like, wait, who's talking about loving anybody, Kirk? Calm down a minute. Slow your roll.
Whoa there, boy.
Oh boy. All right. So that
Yeah.
was a,
We've got tech problems all up in this.
that was our second tech problem. Hopefully that will be the last.
Yeah.
So I think we were just talking about Requiem for Methuselah, and I think I'd just
Yeah.
gotten to the part where I was okay, I hadn't discussed the part about the episode that I really liked, which
Okay.
is okay, the part of the episode that I really enjoy is the advancement of Reyna's character. I think Reyna is really cool, and I really like what the actress did with her. Because she goes from being like this almost brain dead mannequin to having emotions and like really understanding the importance of choice.
So yeah, progress.
Right, and I really appreciate that, especially towards the end, because the whole episode is basically a series of confrontations between Kirk and Flint over her affections. Because Flint's idea was maybe if I put her next to some humans, she'll gain emotions, because I don't want to bang a mannequin.
Well, who does, unless it's, Kim Cattrall?
Data maybe. But anyway, moving on. So he does that, but of course then she starts falling for Kirk, even though personally I think it would have made more sense for her to fall for Spock, but that's okay. I have a Spock thing, we'll admit it. But anyway, towards the end, she starts realizing that she doesn't have to just do what everyone tells her. She even starts saying, I can choose. And unfortunately, Kirk, who up until this point has been like, singing the praises of being human and having the ability to choose, completely misses the point of her
Of
realizing.
course. Of course.
Yeah, and says, "Yes, now you can choose between me or Flint." And it's like, how about you ask her what she wants instead of presenting her with two binary choices and saying she has to pick one?
Maybe she's a lesbian. Who knows?
Or maybe she has a thing for Spock. I'm just saying.
They didn't ask.
They did not. We will never know. And so all of this emotional stress overwhelms her circuits and she dies, basically. So, and I'll buy that Kirk messed up and he recognizes that he messed up. Like, he never specifically addresses that, but he is really sad, and I'm willing to accept that he's realizing that he probably should have been more considerate about what she wanted, and less trying to just convince her to come with him, right?
Wait, are you saying that there was a situation in which Kirk was self-centered?
A little bit.
Yeah,
Just a little bit.
I'm shocked.
Ruh-roh-raggy.
Oh, yeah.
So I appreciate that he's really sad at the end, because he should be. And Shatner does a very good job of portraying that. But I do have to agree with Data Logan that the part where Spock just straight up erases his memory without asking is a.
That does seem like a pretty un-Spock thing to do.
Yeah, and it's un-Spock and it's un-Kirk. I mean, Kirk would never, Star Trek V aside, it's pretty obvious from watching the original series that Kirk's philosophy is that suffering is part of being human. And I don't think Kirk would want his memories removed, and for Spock to do it without his permission is kind of like, it's like,
Brain rape.
yeah, a little bit. It's like, Spock, sometimes humans say, I wish I could die. The response that,
Hyperbole, Spock. Hyperbole is a thing.
yeah, the proper response to that is not to shoot them. I'm just saying, if there are any aliens listening to this podcast, we sometimes say things we don't mean. This is a
Spock
thing.
is now the overly literal alien, so.
Yeah.
Gosh, I'm so embarrassed. I wish I could just crawl in a hole, pre commencing hole digging.
I'm gonna go dig a hole for you. Be just big enough to crawl in. It's like, God, I wish my brother had never been born. I'm getting in a time machine. It's like, no, Spock, don't. Okay, fine.
I'm so hungry, I could eat a horse. No, Spock, no!
Not Binky.
Is Binky your horse name?
Binky is the name of the horse from Discworld that Death rides. It is.
Right!
He's the best horse.
Better than Bill the Pony? I don't think so.
I don't know, man. I would pick Binky
Bill the
if.
Pony was a badass.
I'm not saying he wasn't, but if someone came down to me and said all horses, both fictional and non-fictional, are going to be destroyed except one, I would save Binky.
Not Bill?
No, not Bill. It would have to be
He was
Binky.
so loyal.
Yeah, I like Bill too, okay? Bill is cool, but sometimes I have to play favorites.
All right, fine, fine, fine.
Just saying.
Be like that.
Partially because I wouldn't want Death to be sad.
Oh, true. Don't piss off death.
All right. So, all right.
Out
So that. So those are
of
my.
that tangent.
So those are my feelings on Requiem for Methuselah. I do think it's a good episode. It's sabotaged by some kind of silly writing scenes, which I feel might just be 60s. Like if I watched more 60s television, it might I might it might you might see this sort of oversimplification of romance. It's like he's pretty, she's pretty. They're looking at each other. They're in love.
Well, yeah, pretty much.
So, nowadays I feel like we have a more complex understanding of relationships.
Only jest. Only
And we the idea that a man is going to fall head over heels for a woman, which you do still see plenty of times in
Oh,
movies.
yeah.
But that it's going to happen in like 5 minutes when he has this huge other problem to deal with is a little bit more out of date. We kind of look at that and are like, really? That's a little silly.
Yeah.
Our next email is from Mares, and it is a audio email, and
Ooh.
it is sent to us as a recording using a voice synthesizer because she doesn't want us to know what she sounds like because
Robot. Robot.
she is a secret agent, and if we knew what she sounded like, she'd have to kill us. All right, so I'm gonna go ahead and play this for you, and you can hear the glory of this email.
Hi, Oren and crew. Here's the promised email on your Sickness Trek show. I loved your discussion on all the episodes you talked about. The Quickening was easily my favorite Star Trek medical story, too. There are two episodes you didn't mention, and that I'd like to get your opinions on: Enterprise's Observer Effect, and Deep Space Nine's Mellora. In Observer Effect, two Organians inhabit various members of the Enterprise crew to observe how they handle a disease outbreak, as a basis for deciding whether or not humans were ready for first contact. This is one of my favorite Enterprise episodes. I was engaged right from the start, when I saw Malcolm and Travis obviously acting way out of character, straight through till the end. There were just two points that bothered me about it. For one, I wish that the aliens had not been the Organians. If memory serves, the Organians in the original series did intervene, in the end, to stop the Federation and the Klingon Empire from going to war. However, the Organians in Enterprise seemed unwilling to intervene at all, but had their own very strict prime directive to prevent them doing so. The only thing that saved the Enterprise crew is that, in this good cop, bad cop duo, the good cop decided to toss out the rule book and cure the virus. Odd thing is, the Enterprise crew had previously faced the same decision in Dear Doctor, which you talked about. Phlox found the means to cure the genetic plague killing off the Valakians, yet in the end they refused to administer it, in order not to interfere in the natural evolution of Valakians and Menk. Thus they risked condemning the entire Valakian race to extinction, simply in order to uphold a principle that hadn't even been precisely formulated yet. That was one of the few times I actually found myself shouting at the screen. Observer Effect is from season 4. Now that the crew found themselves on the other end of the equation, I wish they would have at least referenced Dear Doctor and re-examined their decision from then. But no. Oh well. In Mellora, Ensign Mellora Pavla, an Alazan from a lower gravity planet, has to use wheelchairs and crutches to function in normal gravity. Bashir develops a neurologic treatment that would allow her to move about freely, and she must decide whether to go through with it or not. She opts not to pursue the treatment, because it would mean that she could no longer return home to her low gravity planet for any length of time without permanent neurological damage, and because she would no longer feel like herself. What messages do you think disabled people might take from this? What do you think you would choose if you were in her place? Can you think of any real-world examples? Well, that's enough for now. Orin, I was glad to hear you're well again. Have a wonderful day, and I'm looking forward to the next show. Cheers, Renee.
Yeah, the secret twist to that is actually she talks like Paul Lynde. Oh, you lord! All this Star Trek.
I talked like that, I do the voice, a voice synthesizer too. But for everybody who else who emails us, you guys are all officially on notice.
Yeah. You've gotta up your game.
Mares has called you out.
We've got a robot boy, so beat that.
Yeah, just deal with it.
Lower your sunglasses, 'cause you got to deal with it.
And I am dealing with it.
Yeah, no, right?
Dealing with it is the new thing to do. It's considered a lot more successful than not dealing with it.
Yeah, I mean that's less confrontational and less assertive.
This is true. All
Yeah.
right, so I'm going to answer. Hello, Grace.
Hey, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
It just said that it dropped the call.
It did drop it did drop the call.
Oh.
I'm hearing an echo from you now. Let me turn down. Can you turn down your speakers a little bit?
Yeah. How about now?
I think that's better.
All right, cool.
I'm still hearing it a little bit. I'm hoping. Okay, it seems gone now. So now that I said we were not going to have any more technical difficulties, we had another one. So that was
Yeah.
exciting. Gosh darn it, I'm still hearing that echo.
Yeah.
I really hope that fades.
All right.
That's that.
I'm not hearing it, so I think we're all right.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to answer her first question or her second question first
Okay.
about Melora. Let me double check that we are recording. We are recording. Okay.
Excellent.
Okay. So Melora is the episode of Deep Space Nine where, in case anyone has forgotten, an ensign named Melora Pe Palar or Pavlar, Melora Pavlar, comes onto the station. She's from a very low gravity world. She has to use a wheelchair and this like super brace to be able to move around. And it's a little bit convenient that she is from a super low gravity world and has the exact same build as a human, but that's okay.
Maybe they aren't all that evolved yet.
And I mean, Star Trek probably doesn't have the budget to go and hire someone from a low gravity world to play that part, so I'm willing to forgive them on this one.
It's like the problem they had with X-Men. They couldn't find an actual woman with diamond skin to play Emma Frost.
Yeah, it's a problem.
I know, right? Or are they just not going the extra mile?
Also, I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that Hugh Jackman probably doesn't actually have metal claws.
Me.
I know. I mean, maybe he does. Maybe he should keep them really well hidden. But there was he
He
and
does do musical theater, so he's got all kinds of hidden talent.
that's true. But he and what's his name? Neil Patrick Harris were like having a standoff at the Tonys. And I'm pretty sure if he'd had those claws, Neil Patrick Harris would be missing a head.
Well, Neil Patrick Harris has a freeze ray, so
Oh, well, that's true.
they're probably just doing it for the sake of not killing the audience.
Right, now that we're done with our X-Men and Dr. Horrible related tangents,
We're never done with that, Oren. It never ends.
apparently. So the question that she asked was what messages do I think that disabled people might take from this? What do I think I would choose if I were in her place? And can I think of any real world examples? That's kind of tough,
Yeah.
because I can't think of a real world scenario where you would have some kind of disability, be it from injury or from some kind of birth defect, where getting rid of it would be bad for you. The closest I can think of, and this is very uninformed, this is just what I've been led to believe by other people, is that sometimes in the because the like maybe with the deaf community, it's a very close-knit community.
Yeah.
And I could see maybe if suddenly you could hear, you might not have the same connection with that community.
Definitely, and some people in the deaf community consider it like cheating to get a cochlear implant.
Yeah.
Sort of like you're forcing the hearing culture onto someone if you have if you have a kid and you have them get a cochlear implant, like you are robbing them of this entire experience.
Yeah, and I can understand that, but although that's I doubt all but I have a hard time believing that they would make the same that they would like shun an adult who decided to get a hearing implant.
Well, people have shunned over Stranger Things, so
That's
you never know.
possible. And again, I don't want to make assumptions because this is I know very little about the deaf community and I feel
Yeah.
like I am making huge guesses about people I don't know. So I am not going to continue on that trend. The closest parallel that I can draw in the real world is actually more of a social issue.
Okay.
It would be like if you it would be like if you were raised in a country where or in a belief system where premarital sex was like the worst thing in the entire world.
Are you really equating disability to premarital sex?
Hold on, bear with me.
I'm pairing with you.
But
I'm just saying.
and you decide but you decided you wanted to anyway. And you would have to choose but if you once you did that, if your relatives found out, you wouldn't be able to go home because they would shun you. You'd have to make that choice.
So the Amish.
Or somebody else.
Yeah.
Or if you went to a, or if you were in a society that, for whatever reason, did not approve of educating you, be it because you were a woman or because you were, a few inches too short or what have you, and you moved to another society and got educated, you'd have to decide if that was worth it to you because you might not be able to go home.
That's true, yeah. That's
So
actually
it's,
a pretty good analogy right there.
yeah. So maybe a little bit more appropriate than the premarital sex issue, is what you're saying. But okay, so that being what it is,
Disability aside, the character of Melora, we do see her do some like literal floundering around on the floor that's pretty silly.
yeah.
But in the end, spoiler alert, she saves the day through her flying around and low gravity ability thing.
Yeah, and it should be
And
clear.
it's a cool moment. You're rooting for her at that point, and you get to see her finally, have a badass moment, and it's great.
Yeah, and
So.
it should be clear that she is if she takes this operation to be able to operate in normal gravity, she would be giving up her ability to fly around, basically. And that's a terrible thing to give up. Like
Hell yeah.
I would have a hard time making that choice.
Also, one of the things that kind of bothered me about it, and they drew this comparison in the episode actually between the story of the Little Mermaid and Melora's story, and that is how much of her changing is her changing to please Bashir? Because she's sort of developing a relationship with him.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I think I could help you. And it's like, well, maybe she doesn't want to. Maybe she shouldn't have to change to make you happy.
Yeah, that's
That's
another.
part of the Disney version of The Little Mermaid that always bothered me the most.
Yeah, you and a lot of other people, you and me both.
Feminism!
That is definitely, and that is in there. And it is pretty clear that Bashir wants to get himself a piece of that low gravity action.
With her weird bearded, beaded hair and everything.
Yeah, so
That
there
hair
is.
was so distracting.
So there is something to that. And I don't know. I think if I
That
w
said, and I still remember the freaking hair.
Yeah, if I was in her position, whether or not I would go through with the procedure would probably have to do with how much do I like my parents.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if it was me in the real world right now, I would not do it because I have a very strong relationship with my parents, and if someone told me that I could get this cool operation to be able to operate, to be able to walk around in my job exploring that I took, but I
Yeah.
could never go and see my parents again, I would be
Yeah.
like, no, thank you. I will deal with this problem that I have. But if I didn't have a strong relationship with my family, yeah, I'd go for it. Like, because I've never been terribly tied to place, right? Like, to
Yeah.
me, home is wherever I happen to be living.
Well, if I can bring it back to the disabled analogy, you have to wonder,
Yes.
it's a little sad when you think about how many people who can, are considered disabled and who are okay with themselves as a disabled person have
Yeah.
sort of had their motives questioned by a relationship and that sort of thing, if that makes any sense.
Elaborate, because it sounds interesting.
Like, let's say you're in a wheelchair and you're okay with that. You've gotten used to it and everything, but you get in a relationship and they're like, I feel like you could shoot for more than the wheelchair. Like every year you hear about some kid learning to walk at their graduation and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like someone who, even though you're okay with who you are, isn't okay with who you are.
That would be very unfortunate.
This is actually a piece of advice that I give my little sister very often. If someone is saying that they like you, but they want you to change, then it's probably not you they like.
Yeah, that's the thing. I agree with that.
Bashir just got a little bit of the Kirk fever and really wants to bang an alien.
Yeah, and I again, if I were in her position, I she sh if she was going to do it, she should do it because it's what she wants, not because it's what Bashir wants for her. And I'd like to think Bashir realized that,
Yeah, I think he did by the end.
and he grew a little bit. And I actually have a there is a real life story that's vaguely related to this. It was in a book called The Anthropologist on Mars, which is a
Oh,
very
yeah?
good book, and it was the story of this guy who was blind because he had developed these incredibly thick cataracts when he was like a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And he had basically, you know, adapted to being blind. He had a job as a masseuse,
Oh.
and he had access to
That's
special
actually a
powers.
thing. Blind masseusery is a thing in rural Asia. I was reading a thing about that.
Yeah. So he had that job. He earned a living. He had access to special like low cost housing because of his blindness. He got in a relationship, and according to this account, I wasn't there, so I don't know if this account is accurate. But according to this account, the person he was in a relationship with pressured him into getting this new surgery that could remove the cataracts that was only recently available. And he did. And it could have worked out okay because suddenly he could see again. But the people around him didn't understand that, including his doctors, didn't understand that sight is learned.
Yeah.
Like they just expected him, they expected the cataracts to fall off and him immediately to be able to see it again and function like a sighted person. But he couldn't. All he saw were blobs.
Yeah.
Like he didn't know how to identify a face or a chair or a
He'd
car.
probably go into some major sensory overload, wouldn't he?
Yeah, and he had like a breakdown because they kept pressuring him to like he couldn't live in his housing anymore. He lost his job.
Jeez.
And it was really sad.
That's awful.
And it has a kind of happy ending. He basically had like a breakdown, and for some reason, I'm not entirely clear what the medical reasons for this was. He actually lost his sight, and I don't know if it was just like a stress overload or whatever, but he was kind of able to get
Hysterical blindness?
something like that. I don't know, but he can't see again. Like something
Oh,
happened,
well.
and he lost his sight, but he was basically able to go back to his old life.
Good.
So, I mean, it's not a happy story, but
It's
at
not a
least.
perfect parable.
It's yeah, it's an interesting like kind of parallel story to what's going on in Melora.
Yeah.
Do you want to answer the question, Grace, of if you would go through with the procedure or not? It's kind of personal.
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, you'd trade off getting to fly for getting to be a part of this whole wider world of the Federation. So, I think it would all depend personally. I mean, it sounds like the character Melora has a family back home, and she has a brother she's close to, and you know, I honestly don't know if I would do that personally, but it's kind of subjective of a question, so.
Yeah, that's true. And of
It
course.
sounds like something that would definitely be tempting, though, to give up a part of yourself to be part of something bigger,
Yeah.
or at least a tighter part of something bigger.
Yeah, my I can I think that's
Who
probably.
hasn't been tempted by that before, though, honestly?
Well, there's this guy in the alleyway outside who is offering me free rocket boots if I give him my legs. Should I take him up on it? All right. So, I think we shall move on to her second, to her actually her. And we're back. We totally meant to do that. We didn't.
Back again.
All right.
Yeah. At
So.
this point, we're just testing your patience, really.
Yeah, you guys just get to deal with our problems.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay,
We
so.
make the test, we make the rules.
Back to her first question about the observer effect. I find this to be a very, very interesting episode. And Grace, you rewatched it recently, right? Okay.
I watched it for the first time, actually.
Oh, cool.
Because, as you know, I'm not a big Enterprise fan, but I gave it a try for you, the fans.
So, as someone who watched it for the first time, what did you think of it?
Thought it was a pretty good episode. I was intrigued by it, by the idea of these non-corporeal beings possessing the members of the crew to see how they would respond in a crisis. I thought that was definitely an intriguing plot. And it was interesting how it was carried out, but I felt like it could have been carried out better.
Yeah, that's basically how I feel about it.
But it was an interesting idea, and it was interesting to see these two recurring characters of the aliens popping up in different established cast members.
Yeah,
That definitely looked like it must have been a fun challenge for them to do.
the first thing that I find interesting about this episode is that it is like the bottle show to end all bottle shows.
Yeah.
There are no new sets. They don't go outside. There are no guest stars at all. It's
Nope.
just all
Well, they don't have to. That's the fun thing when you have someone being possessed.
right, which I think was a clever which I think was a clever production trick. There are no extras with speaking lines.
Definitely, yeah.
There's
And I really liked that opening scene where you can tell, like, right from the get-go that there's something. Son of a bitch. You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, it's saying that there's a connection problem.
It's lying to you.
Okay. But anyway, I love how at the start of the character,
The start of the episode?
yeah, you know just right off the bat that these characters are different and that they're talking to each other not as members of crew, but as different aliens possessing people who are in the same crew.
Right. And
And that was just an interesting scene to sort of hook you in, and I enjoyed it.
I also, I really like the actor who plays Reed. I've forgotten
Yeah.
his name. Dominic Keating. Yeah. I think he's a really good actor, and I actually think Reed was a good character. I'm just, it's a shame he was surrounded by everyone else.
Yeah, you said before his only problem is he's the most competent person on the crew.
That is his problem. He keeps trying to do things that make sense, and everyone else is like, "No, Reed, don't do those sorts of things." He's like, hey, maybe we should scan the area around this planet just to, make sure we know who's here. And they're like, no, we don't need to do that. It's like, oh, look, there wasn't a hostile Andorian ship here the whole time. It's like,
Well, in the land of the Cyclops, the two-eyed man is the weirdo.
that's fair. Okay, so,
If I can get really creative with an analogy there.
which frankly, I won't stop you.
All right, cool. That's how we roll.
So before we talk about the medical implications of this episode, one thing that I thought was interesting, excuse me, was the way that they tried to, because this was like the episode where the writers were like, "Man, Hoshi is a really lame character. We need to make her cool."
Yeah, they were trying to make her cool with the illegal card playing thing.
And describing her as being a black belt in Aikido.
Had we seen that before, or?
No. And when I watched that, I was like, really? You're telling me that Hoshi is a black belt and broke someone's arm because he messed up her poker game? I mean, don't get me wrong, I appreciate the effort to make Hoshi more interesting, but you can't.
That whole scene was really weird, though, because he just, like, randomly says, oh, yeah, this reminds me of being in the dorms. And she's like, I got kicked out of the dorms.
Look, she's establishing her street cred, okay?
And she tells the whole story like he's kind of dragging it out of her, but she's the one who offered the story up in the first place.
Yeah, it just seems awkward.
So, yeah, it's really awkward. But so now I kind of have a theory about this.
Yeah?
Hoshi is lying to try and make herself seem cooler, and she's trying to act all flippant about it.
That makes a lot more
But she's
sense.
really terrible at it.
Especially because apparently she learned the lessons of Aikido really badly. Because she says she broke his arm. But it sounds like what happened is he t did something she didn't like, which was sweep the poker chips off the table. And
Yeah.
in retaliation, or to prevent him from doing that, she broke his arm. It doesn't sound like he attacked her.
Yeah.
And if you've ever taken Aikido, that is the first thing they teach you, is you do not attack unless you are defending yourself. You don't go and break someone's arm to stop them from sweeping poker chips off the table.
Yeah, Hoshi was just kind of like, oh yeah, I broke a guy's arm, and then I kicked him in the face, and I broke his spine, and yeah, you didn't want to mess with me.
It's like, woo, Aikido! And it's like, are you
I
sure?
speak Portuguese, bitches.
It's like, are you sure you didn't mean judo or some martial art that does not emphasize defense and
No, of
non-aggression?
course not. I totally know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that lends credence to
I'm
her.
Asian, remember?
Yeah, I guess. That just lends credence to her just completely making stuff up.
Yeah.
And it's just like, writers, I appreciate what you're trying to do here, but you can't just completely retcon a character's backstory to try to make her seem cooler.
And if you're going to try and make someone seem cool, put a little bit of effort into it, at least.
And so then they have her like bust out of the quarantine, and their excuse is math is just another language.
Well, they really ass-pulled that one, didn't they?
And to an extent, that is true.
But shouldn't she have been able to, like, do that before and stuff, though? That there's another thing that it really would have served them well to establish earlier on.
Yeah, but here's the thing about it. it is sort of true that math is another language. Like, that is a thing, to an extent. But that doesn't actually, like, if you look at that pad that she's manipulating, that looks like a combination lock. Like, you have to put in the right code, like a keypad. She basically, but her being, like, if she's super good at math, that doesn't decrease the number of possible combinations there were, right?
Not really.
Like, you could
She
get,
she's Aikido and lock breaking because she's hardcore.
Like, you could
Huh.
get, you know, Euclideus, or Euclideus? What's his name? Euclid. You could get Euclid or Pythagorean in there, and
Pythagoras.
Pythagoras?
Yeah.
Okay, I can't remember Greek people's names. You know, or Isaac Newton, and they're all math geniuses, but they wouldn't be able to reduce the number of possible combinations on that keypad, right?
Frankly, the first thing I think they'd be thinking is, "Wow, I'm on a spaceship! How'd I get here?"
Quiet, you. Like,
They have
being.
bigger problems if they ended up on the Enterprise.
Like, frankly, I wish it would have made a lot more sense if Hoshi had said something to the equivalent of, "I'm the communications officer. I know what all the passwords are. I thought it might be useful sometime."
Yeah.
That would have made a little bit more sense than her, "I can math at this console until it breaks."
Yeah, she's just throwing math and communications at it until it works.
Yeah.
What'd you think of her, like, sort of going feverish and, like, switching languages every couple of minutes?
That's something that they've established Hoshi actually does in the past.
Yeah, but I. What did you think of how they handled it in this episode?
I was okay with it. I
Yeah.
mean, granted, I don't have a lot of. I'm really bad with languages. I can barely speak English, so, like, I don't really have any experience with speaking multiple languages, but I could buy that if you can speak like 50 billion languages like Hoshi can, and you were
Yeah.
delirious, you might just start talking in weird languages.
Yeah. Like Ricky Ricardo when he's angry.
It's you know, it's kind of a trope, right? Where
Yeah.
it's, you know, that's a thing that if you have a character who speaks multiple languages, at some point they're gonna start yelling in multiple languages just to remind you they can do that.
Yeah.
I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
I actually think of all the characters that shown in this episode, I actually think Tucker was probably the strongest, which is
Yeah.
unusual because normally he's Tucker How I Shuttle Pod, you know.
Yeah.
He crashes into the sh he like actually bumps his shuttle on the ship in the first episode, but
With my minimal knowledge of Enterprise, even I know that.
he actually does pretty well, and I think Connor Trinneer was really, you know, putting in the extra effort.
Yeah, true.
I appreciated that a lot. So let's talk about the Organians for a minute here.
Yeah.
Okay, so one the question that I have that I would really like to know is, has no one else who's been to this planet considered putting up a warning beacon?
I guess not. I
Because,
guess all the species that they've encountered before were just major jerks.
Because they apparently have been studying this for like close to 1,000 years.
Yeah. It's. That seems a little far-fetched. I mean, even if the Klingons are like, "Nope, we gotta kill these guys and pull out of here," it'd be like a warning sign or something.
Yeah, so I have a hard time believing that nobody else did that, which suggests to me that the Organians have been actively removing those warning beacons,
The
which
Organians are jerks.
they are. They are huge jerks.
Just unnecessarily.
So like maybe that's not what the episode like meant, but that's kind of what I got out of it.
Yeah.
And so, but I, you know, I can kind of. It also seemed kind of weird that the Organians were spending so much time on this test that they'd already determined no one could pass.
What are they even bothering giving the test again if they've already reached their conclusions and
Right,
stuff?
that's what I don't understand, because it seems
And
like.
I think one of the Organians actually says that. Well, why are we doing this if you've already decided humans are hopeless?
Right. But that, and see, when I first saw this episode, what I thought the idea was it was a test of their moral fiber. It was supposed to be like testing to see how they would react to
Like
a.
what their ethics are like as a people?
Right.
Yeah.
But
that would have made more sense.
It actually seemed like they were testing to see if the people were able to cure the virus, which is kind of an arbitrary test for intelligence. And
yeah.
Again, it's a test that they apparently decided no one can pass, so why are they bothering?
They're Kobayashi Maru-ing everyone.
I guess.
Just in an extremely jerkish way.
So that seemed a little bit strange. The other thing was that for people who have been doing this for thousands of years, they are really bad at it.
Yeah, like when they possess Hoshi and Tucker and they're just there like talking to each other and they're like, oh wait, there's a security camera in here.
Yep.
Like, you didn't expect that?
No. Especially because they know there's a security camera. Yeah. They've looked at that monitor before.
Yeah.
And they're also really bad at being...
They forgot.
Yeah, they're really bad at being subtle. Like, did you pay attention to the way they were asking their questions? It was like, yeah. I am not possessed by an alien. Please tell me these things I want to know.
Unfortunately, the Organians don't have acting classes.
And it's like, really? You only get discovered in 2% of your missions? Because the Cardassians would have been on that.
They would have been all up in that.
They are a paranoid people. They would not take kindly to what you're doing.
No.
Which is, I think, it would have made a lot more sense for them to possess, like, a nurse or something. Because I think Phlox has some nurses. Not in this episode, but sometimes he does.
Nurses when convenient.
Because that way they could have had a nurse and could have asked those questions in a way that actually made sense.
Maybe. Well, one of them was supposed to be, like, the newbie, right?
Yeah. So
I guess we can kind of partially blame it on that.
Right, but even the guy who was supposed to be there for a really long time when he was possessing Reed was, like, really awkward when he was talking to Phlox.
Yeah.
So what did you think of, Archer and Phlox being all, like, super down on them? And in the backdrop of Archer's decision to let the entire Valakian race die off in Dear Doctor.
Yeah, they do mention that for, like, they have one mention of it, and it's, yeah. Like, I would have liked to see them touch on that some more. Like, there could have really been some more internal conflict with Archer there. There could have been, like, him getting freaked out by understanding what they're saying and what they're getting at. There was just so much more that could have been done.
And I feel like that episode was written, because this is a completely new creative team, right? I feel like that episode was them being like, Dear Doctor was really bad. We should write an episode that explains that was a terrible thing, but they couldn't directly say it. Like, they couldn't just directly badass, or not bad, bad mouth.
Yeah.
The previous creative team. So they had to allude to it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, because I do think Archer makes some good points, but it's, you know, the exact opposite of the points he made a couple seasons ago.
Yeah, Archer's not very good at practicing what he preaches, I guess.
Yeah, and it does kind of feel like, because he starts arguing with them after he's been infected, so it kind of feels like, guys, this is a different
situation. So when he has to save his own skin, it's entirely different.
Yeah, it's like, guys, this is a different situation. I'm the one infected now.
Bum, bum, bum.
Oh my god. Okay.
Well, stop the presses. Archer's in trouble.
Yep. And so then there's also the Organians themselves. And I'm wondering if the implication of this episode is that because that one Organian interfered this time, that was why the Organians were willing to interfere in I forget what the episode is called, but the TOS episode with the Organians.
Yes.
Because
I don't remember what it was called either.
In that episode, the Organians do interfere to prevent a war.
Well, good for them, being proactive.
So we could always say maybe there are two different groups of Organians, right? Or not all Organians have to be the same. But since in Star Trek, most cultures tend to be monocultures, I think it's fairly likely that the idea is that this guy... This newbie Organian, like, influenced their policy in such a way that now they've decided they actually are going to start interfering.
We know, there could be different schools of thought within the Organians already, though.
There could be, and I would like to
be racist.
I would like to think that there are, because, you know, if we're going to use humans as...
They're more than a one-dimensional culture.
Yeah, if we're going to use humans as a template, there are definitely a more than one or two schools of thought on how we should handle things within, you know, within our society.
Yeah.
Just a few. All right. Was there anything else we needed to talk about with Dear Doctor? I'm reading the transcript of that voice recording to see if there were any other questions that she asked. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about on that episode, Grace?
Not really.
Okay, then. Our main topic for today, which probably isn't going to be super long, but our main topic for today is episodes that follow through from a different series.
Yay!
And that was why I liked...
Continuity!
I really
wanted,
and that was why I really wanted to talk about Observer Effect that Mares brought up, because that is a continuation from the original series.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm talking about episodes that picked up a plot thread that one series started and ran with it.
Yeah.
So the first ones that come to my mind are the DS9 Mirror Universe episodes.
Yeah.
So I really, really liked the first one. Like, I thought it was really cool how the Mirror Universe had changed, the Terran Empire had been overthrown. And I know some people say that as being like, you know, that's poo-pooing on the idea of Roddenberry's idea of good, you know, conquering evil and saying that if you try to be nice, everyone will sit on you. But I don't think so. We don't really know exactly what happened, and I'm willing to let it go in the alternate universe.
Well, yeah.
So I really appreciated that. And, you know, we had regular Kira playing across from, like, super sex intendant Kira, which was funny. I mean, I enjoy seeing Nana Visitor get to you know, expand her range a little bit.
Get to camp it up a little.
Yeah, just a little.
Yeah.
And, like, alternate...
And hit on everything that moves.
And a few things that don't. And, you know, alternate O'Brien is cool. Alternate Sisko is cool. Mm-hmm. Overall, I really liked that episode.
Well, that's the thing, fun thing about whenever they do a Mirror episode. It's always fun to see the same actors get to play with different variations of the same character.
Agreed. Although, it was kind of funny to me that when Odo exploded in the alternate universe, they used a completely different effect than when they would next kill a changeling.
Yeah, whatever.
He kind of exploded like a paper mache balloon popping. Like, you know, kind of...
That's the secret. The changelings are paper mache.
And, like, you know, later on when they kill a changeling, they'll turn into their gelatinous state and then turn into ash.
Yeah, they, like, melt, don't they?
Yeah. So I was like, continuity error!
I'm melting!
I also think it would be interesting to see what the Dominion looks like in the alternate universe.
That I would like to see, too, yeah. Even more evil Vorta look like?
Maybe they're really nice.
Yeah, maybe they're just incredibly pleasant and not creepy at all. They meet up with Weyoun, and he's like, hey guys, I made cookies!
Because, I mean, there is the question of, is the Mirror Universe a universe where everything is opposite, or is it just a universe where everything is a little bit worse?
Yeah.
And they actually do bring that up in one of the later Deep Space Nine episodes where Rom is trying to figure that out. Because, you know, they run into Brunt, and Brunt is like a super cool guy. And they're like, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. So if Brunt is super cool in this universe, so does that mean that Gul Dukat is super cool in this universe? Like,
I know what you mean by super cool and everything, but I was imagining like Fonzie Brunt.
I would watch that show.
Acquisition.
I wish I could say that in the Brunt voice, but I'm not even going to try.
Acquisition.
Yeah, there you go. I like it.
I know my Jeffrey Combs.
So.
Combs.
So there is that question, right? Like the question of does everything that happens in the normal universe have the equal and opposite reaction in the Mirror Universe? You know, the first episode seems to indicate no, because it seems like the Mirror Universe, after after Kirk and company from the original series got involved, it completely split off on its own path.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know, it's an interesting thought.
That feels like, though, it's also kind of a statement of what the concept of good will do in a moral vacuum. Does that make sense?
Yeah, keep going. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Whether if good exists in a world where everyone is evil, is there anything that can actually come of it, or is it just going to die out?
Yeah. And I think that the Deep Space Nine Mirror Universe episodes, because they involve, like, you know, the ragtag resistance of not just humans, because you see that the Klingon Cardassian alliance is oppressing everyone who's not Klingon or Cardassian, right?
Yeah.
So
we see Dax in there too.
Dax and Rom and Tuvok, of all people.
Yeah.
And
Tuvok, get back to your own series.
And let me just say, I think of all the Dax haircuts, her Mirror Universe haircut is my favorite.
Yeah.
I love that haircut.
Let me look that up real fast.
It's kind of a neat haircut. I appreciate it. But unfortunately, the later Mirror Universe episodes.
That's a good haircut on her.
Yeah,
she looks good with bangs.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. But unfortunately, I think that the later Mirror Universe episodes did not work very well.
Mm-hmm.
I was not a big fan of them. Like, when it first started and it was like, we need Sisko to rescue your... All right, which one happened first? Sisko rescuing his wife or Sisko building the Defiant?
I don't know.
I think it was Sisko rescuing his wife. I was like, okay, that one was alright.
Yeah.
That one was fine.
And then they bring him back to build the Defiant.
And they bring him back to build the Defiant, and I always hated that. I did not think Sisko would have... I've said this before. I think that Sisko was a great consulting officer on the Defiant, but I never saw him as the guy with the technical expertise to actually build it.
The man with the plan.
Yeah, I assumed he was the guy who they were like, hey, you have field experience. Tell us how this ship would function in an actual fight.
Yeah.
That
makes more sense.
It does make more sense. And I really think O'Brien, the guy who has fixed the Defiant, you know, 50 million times by then, would have been a better choice to call in to help build it.
Yeah, just a thought, yeah.
But then they would have had to have Colm Meaney talking to Colm Meaney, which might have been hard to do, but I would have been fine with it.
I would have watched that.
I'd watch Colm Meaney on Colm Meaney.
I just watched Hour of Colm Meaney. Colm Meaney on Colm Meaney action.
Yeah, I know, right?
Wow.
And of course, the Defiant episode is also the one where we get Worf, like, throw a frickin' tantrum. Because apparently Mirror Universe Worf is just like, you know, if
has
he doesn't...
Has no sense of self-control.
Apparently not. If he doesn't get his way, he's just like...
And he has, like, Garak as a pet or something.
Yeah, and I think it was...
The implications aside, that's just what?
Yeah. I think it was Andrew J. Robinson who said he really didn't like the Mirror Universe episodes. Because, like, everybody else got to play their character, like, you know, different and interesting. And his character is the same character, but more boring.
Yeah.
Because he's
boy.
He's Garak, but without the trace of morality that makes him interesting. And,
without
like...
the intrigue.
So he's just an ass, is kind of what it is.
He's Worf's snotty whipping boy, pretty much.
Yeah, and I can imagine that role not being very fun to play.
Mm. Yeah.
What did you think of do you remember the last Mirror Universe episode?
Which one was that?
That was the one with Ezri.
No, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, okay. You haven't gotten that far?
No.
Well, let me just go ahead and say that I did not like it. I thought it was, like, by that point, they just kind of given up. And you remember that scene where Worf, like, throws his tantrum?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, the entire episode is like that. Like, that level of silliness.
Oh, joy.
And at the end...
I already kind of have low expectations when it comes to a Mirror Universe episode already, so...
Yeah, it's really bad. I mean, you should still watch it. You shouldn't skip it, because you have to experience my pain. But, like, it's just really goofy, and of course it's got, like, they decided to... They bring over the Ferengi, like, Quark, Rom, and Nog... Maybe not Nog. I think it's just Quark and Rom. And they, of course, and normally I really like the Ferengi storylines in Deep Space Nine, but in this one they're like, they're going to engage in Ferengi antics.
Always with the antics.
Yeah, and which is, it's just, it's no bueno. And at the end they, like, because this was the 90s, at the end they have, like, a scene where they insinuate that Ezri is a lesbian in this setting, and it's all like, lesbians!
They did the same thing with Kira, though, didn't they?
Sort of, but with Kira it was a little more... I actually think they handled it with more maturity with Kira, believe it or not. No. I think Superintendent Kira was clearly like intended to be omnisexual was the
Yeah.
idea. But then in the last episode with Ezri, when they imply that she's a lesbian, it's kind of like it kind of reminded me of like a bunch of teenagers like, you know, giggling under their breath about lesbians and, you know, and two girls and being like, and it's like, come on, really, guys? We can do better. We can be more mature than that.
Deep Space Nine, what happened to the whole progressive thing we had going around with previous Dax and her ex?
Yeah.
Remember when we were nice and mature about that?
And I guess they just decided that the Mirror Universe episode was going to be a comedy episode, because, like, the rest of Season 7 is super, like, grim, because they're fighting this war.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, I think Bada Bing Bada Bang, which is the one where they go and hang out in Vix for the whole episode, is a much better break of the tension than that episode is. So, and then there's you also haven't seen the TOS episode, A Mirror Darkly, have you? Not
no,
TOS,
I
excuse
haven't.
Me, Enterprise. Well, quick summary, I like it a lot. It's Enterprise does the Mirror Universe, and, like, everybody gets to play weird versions of their character. T'Pol is a badass.
For once?
Yeah, I know. I really, really liked the T'Pol in that episode. And, like, Archer is, like, genuinely crazy instead of being only kind of crazy.
Instead of being crazy when you think about it?
Yeah, he's just straight up nuts. Hoshi is a fun character. I appreciate what they do with her. Everybody basically gets to do something cool, and it's a little bit silly, right? I mean, you have the same problem of, like, how on earth could the alternate universe, like, Starfleet function when everybody is constantly trying to kill everyone else? Like, how would you...
I wonder how the Cardassians function, don't you? Doesn't it?
What? I don't know. I think it's actually... Wouldn't that be more of a Klingon problem? Because the Cardassians don't have...
That too, yeah.
Because the Cardassians don't really have an advancement via murder system going on. Like, the very high-level Cardassians do plot and scheme against each other, but, like, you know, your average, you know, Joe Schmo on the street Cardassian isn't, like, planning to murder his boss to get ahead.
We don't know that.
It's true. I don't know that for certain. But I feel pretty comfortable making the assertion. And the thing with the Klingons is actually, if you'll allow me to tangent, the Klingon...
Don't I always?
The Klingon thing is a little bit more structured. There's, like, clearly a... There's a
hierarchy of Klingon there.
Yeah, and there's a ritual of when it's okay to challenge your commander. Mm-hmm. Like, you basically can only do that when your commander really Fs up. Like, if, you know, I've always been under the impression that if you were a Klingon first officer and your commander had just won, like, a great victory, or even was just normally, you know, doing his job, and you were like, hey, commander, I challenge you for command of the ship.
That would be kind of a jerk move.
Yeah, the other Klingons would be like, no, you can't do
what
that.
What was that, man?
Like, he hasn't done anything. But whereas if your commander has just lost a really terrible battle, then you can be like, I challenge you for command of the ship because you're a loser.
Yeah.
Which is still, you know. So that,
you need grounds to challenge them on, I guess.
Yeah, you can't just do it whenever you feel like it.
You can't just start challenging people.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead...
That would be dishonorable.
I'm going to go ahead and skip the augments, because I know you haven't seen that either.
Okay.
Although I would recommend it. The augments arc of Enterprise Season 4, which is Borderlands, Cold Station 12, and augments, is very good. It's some of the best Enterprise that exists.
Okay.
And it's got Brent Spiner.
Ooh.
So, you know.
Brent Spiner.
I don't know how to give it a stronger recommendation.
You can't. You really can't, unless there's Jeffrey Combs.
Okay, so I'm going to move on to... You've seen the movie First Contact, right?
I'm trying to remember if I have. I'm really terrible at remembering the titles.
All right, so First Contact is the one where they fight the Borg. And...
No, I have not seen that one, actually.
Oh, darn. Okay, I should have probably checked with you before I made this list. okay, what about...
It's the gist of it.
Have you seen the Deep Space Nine episode Trials and Tribulations?
Yes.
Okay.
Trials and Tribulations?
Trials and Tribulations. So that is a follow-up to That is a follow-up to the episode Trouble with Tribbles, obviously. So, Grace, what did you think about, because you've seen this episode, how did you think about of Trials and Tribulations?
I like that episode a lot. Are we talking Trials and Tribulations or Trials and Tribulations?
I honestly don't remember. It's one of those things.
Which one are we talking about?
Well, isn't it the same thing? Is
Yeah, I guess.
All right.
Unless there's like another obscure episode that I forgot about.
I don't think here, let me all right,
There's
internet.
an actual trial and no tribbles.
Okay, it's Trials and Tribulations is what it's called.
I was thinking about the tribble one.
Is the name of the episode. And it is the Tribble one.
Okay, then yes, I know exactly what we're talking about.
So how did you think that worked as a follow-up to the original series episode?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I think it's one of those things where it's really fun, both if you have seen the original series and if you're just kind of looking at it as a, oh, hey, old school Star Trek shout out kind of thing. It works on many levels, and it's just a really enjoyable episode.
I agree, especially the I really love the bar scene.
Yeah.
They did such a good job of integrating the DS9 characters into those shots and like reconstructing the set to make it look authentic.
Yeah.
It's really hard to tell when you watch the episode what are the reconstructed shots and what
Yeah, and that's half the fun of the episode, just watching it and being like, how'd they do that? It's just like you get kind of swept away by the smoke and mirrors, but in the funnest way possible.
Yeah, no, it is a very, very, very good episode.
Yeah.
I will tell you one problem that I had with it. This is kind of minor. In retrospect, I really hate the TOS miniskirt uniforms.
Yeah.
I think that they're silly, and I think that they look more like fetish costumes than uniforms.
Well, they do. It was the 60s.
Especially, I mean, and especially when you watch, and I feel for Nichelle Nichols. When she tries to move around in that thing and manage that skirt
Yeah.
without showing us anything we're not supposed to see. And like it's obviously really difficult. And I didn't like it when Dax was like, and women wore less and shows off this uniform and everyone starts ogling her, and I was like, really?
Well, she is gorgeous, but at the same time, they are kind of playing off something a little more serious for laughs.
Don't get me wrong, I think that Terry Farrell is a very attractive woman.
And she looks fabulous in the old school uniform,
And she does. I just
but she
don't.
seems like a character who would have something to say about that.
I just don't think it's appropriate, and I don't think that that is, of all the things that the original series gave us, all the amazing things, I don't think that uniform is something we should be focusing on. Like, we all know that was from the 60s, which was a more blatantly sexist time.
Yeah.
And that's
We're
just.
not having. It's one of those things where it's like, yay, fun, nostalgia. It's like, nostalgia wasn't great for everyone. You know that, right?
It wasn't. And like at the very least, could they have given her some black leggings or something? I don't know. It bothers me when I see it because like I've always felt like the original series was so progressive in so many ways, except in gender equality, where it's
Yeah.
terrible. And I don't think that we should. I think that that's something we just need to move past and not try to establish that in the canon of Star Trek, Starfleet went through this period where it was really sexist.
Yeah.
Because I just don't believe that was a thing that
It would be
Starfleet.
nice if it was one of those things that they were supposed to be beyond, but they were still being held back by. That makes sense. They were supposed to be this perfect utopian society, but they still had all this just random sexism going on.
Yeah, which is just really unfortunate. And I wish they hadn't called attention to it the way they did or at least without some kind of commentary. So all right, so that's my pet peeve. I really love how much awe the main characters have for Kirk and company.
Yeah, that just makes it a lot more fun for the audience to be able to have that with the characters, I think.
Yeah, that it is so cool. And it makes sense, right? I mean, these are living legends. And
Yeah,
I think that,
absolutely.
like, if you think about a crew that has done even half of the things that Kirk and company did in the original series, like, everybody would know who they were.
And it's also really funny to have a group who's done their fair share of crazy stuff too, like the crew of Deep Space Nine, and have them meet up with these people and be like, oh my god, it's Kirk!
And I think it made it pretty clear...
them get starstruck is so fun.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it made it pretty clear that Deep Space Nine was written by huge Trek fans.
Absolutely.
They were so excited to do that episode. I mean, if you listen to some of the behind-the-scenes interviews with them when they did that episode, they are so happy.
I would have been tickled to work on that, so... Yeah.
Although there is the unfortunate behind-the-scenes snafu where they completely cut out the writer of Trouble with Tribbles. Like, he didn't even know it was happening until, like...
Yeah, that was messed up.
He'd heard rumors, and he called and was like, hey, are you guys doing an update of my episode? And they're like, no, we're not. And he only found out because I think it was the New York Times or the New York Post called him and asked him to comment on it. And he was like, oh, okay. So then then they told him. But it was a little bit unfortunate. I think it would have been really interesting to have his input on that episode.
Well, yeah. I mean, also, it's kind of his... intellectual property, isn't it?
Not really. I mean, he sold it to Paramount. Right.
He was like a teenager when he wrote it, wasn't he?
Yeah. So it wasn't that they were legally mandated to involve him. It just would have been, since they were going through all the effort of trying to super respect the original series.
Yeah.
It would have been a nice gesture. And I don't blame the writers or the creative staff really, because I'm pretty sure that was Rick Berman's decision. And I don't know that for a fact, but he was the executive producer of Star Trek. So I think that was his decision not to involve that writer. And we all know how I feel about Rick Berman. So that's Trials and Tribulations. Or Tribulations. Or whatever. we're terrible with names this episode. Earlier I called it Encounter with Rama, that book that I was talking about at like the very start of the episode. It's actually Rendezvous with Rama. It's not Encounter with Rama at all, because I'm really bad at this.
You're just pulling names out of thin air, aren't you?
That's exactly what I'm doing. So the last episode I have on the list is Q-less. Q-less, which is kind of a follow-up to Cupid, in that it continues the story of Vash. You don't like it?
It's not a good episode.
Tell me why it's not a good episode, Grace.
Well, for one thing, I felt like they only did it so early on in the series of Deep Space Nine to try and tie in to people who are still fans of TNG and to try and get their attention, it felt like, and... it's just a silly episode, and not in a fun way. And to see Sisko punch out the Q wall, if you're a Sisko fan, that's fun to see, but it's still like, really, dude's omnipotent, and he's just going to get knocked down to the floor?
Apparently.
And so many moments like that, and
mm-hmm.
It just felt really unnecessary and silly. And there's not much to like about Vash in the first place.
Well, I gotta admit, I do really like Vash. Like, as a character, I think she's interesting.
It feels like we're supposed to find her interesting, but that's just it. We're supposed to, but she's, just kind of meh.
Yeah, my problem with it was that the episode focuses really heavily on the relationship between two guest stars.
Yeah, and we have to see the entire main cast gonna get put in the background.
Yeah, whereas...
which, especially if you're just still starting a show off like they were with Deep Space Nine, is not the best way to go.
Yeah, and I understand why they brought Q into Deep Space Nine, because they really needed to get some... TNG viewers to come and watch the show.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I get that part. That part makes sense to me. What I don't understand is why they didn't put more emphasis on a relationship, and I don't necessarily mean a romantic relationship, but just a relationship between Vash or Q and some of the Deep Space Nine characters. Because when Vash showed up in earlier TNG episodes, whether you like them or not, and there's a lot of divided opinion on that, it was all about her relationship to Picard.
Yeah.
Which made it at least, about the TNG cast.
Mm-hmm. But... it kept them involved, at least.
Outside of rubbing Quark's ears once, Vash doesn't really interact with the Deep Space Nine cast very much.
No, and that's kind of just, a gross moment there.
I gotta admit, I don't actually have the same problem with it as a lot of people do. I understand that the comparison can be drawn between umox and a hand job, but I don't necessarily think it's the same. I mean, it's clear that the Ferengi don't have any cultural taboo about it. Like, you know, for us, for our society, just getting a hand job in public would not be okay, right? You would probably get arrested, because we have it to us that sort of act in public is not all right. That's the sort of thing that needs to be done in private. Clearly, the Ferengi don't feel that way. Like,
Whatever.
for the Ferengi, it's just kind of like whatever. It's just a thing you do. And they, you know, it's you could it's quasi-sexual, but I don't necessarily feel like we need to apply our values to you know to their culture and be like, they're gross and weird.
I'm making my webs.
Now, to be fair, the episode, I really hate the idea that Quark would like contractually force his waitresses to do that.
Yeah, that's messed
Because
up.
I know Quark's a sexist bastard, but I don't think he's that bad.
He's not a pimp.
No, I don't. Yeah, so that does bother me. But the actual act, you know, doesn't bother me too much. It's just, you know, just a thing that, like, for them, it's about as taboo as a back rub.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's Vash doing it, and she knows the equivocal level of taboo for it, and the fact that she's just going along with it is just kind of,
Yeah, I sort of saw that as a, I saw that as the idea of Vash just being a fairly, what do you, what's the galactic equivalent of Metropolitan, or cosmopolitan? Like she's,
Galactopolitan.
yeah, she's just very, she's very widely traveled. She's been exposed to a lot of different cultures.
Oh yeah, she gets around.
But I'm, so yeah, but I yeah, so that's. That part didn't bother me a huge amount, but it does really bother me that Vash barely interacts with the other Deep Space Nine characters, like, at all. And Q kind of torments them a little, but most of Q's time is spent talking to Vash.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, this is a guest star that they never brought back, so it all was kind of pointless.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't really building up to anything. So usually I enjoy follow-ups, but I think this one would have been better served if they just left it in the in Sherwood Forest where we last saw it.
Nice.
All right, so I think that's probably gonna be the end of the episode unless you have something else you wanted to talk about, Grace.
Not really, just a little anecdote I could share.
Please do.
Okay, so as you may or may not know, I on a weekly basis compete in my local bar's trivia contest, which
Yeah.
I'm usually pretty good at because it's nerd trivia. Only thing is, I kind of had to put my money where my mouth was this week because the theme for the entire trivia contest was Star Trek.
Ooh, Mom, Grace,
And
you didn't
I'm
invite me?
This is the first time in my entire history of competing in this in trivia night for like months and months at a time that I didn't place in the first in the top three spots. And it was really embarrassing because it reached the point where they were handing our scorecards back out, and I was like, "Oh man!" And the MC even went as far as to go, like, "Isn't this your job to know about Star Trek? Isn't that what you like are supposed to be all about?" And I was like,
Man.
"Shut up!"
Shame, Grace. Shame.
Got nerd shamed in public. I got
Although,
publicly nerd shamed.
to be fair, I'm actually very bad at Trek trivia. Like I can tell you what happened in episodes, but I can never remember the episode's name or like the name of a
I had
specific.
really bad spelling, and there were a lot more enterprise questions than I expected.
Yeah. Like if some people just ask me like, you know, random questions about Star Trek, very often I will not be able to answer them. Like I can explain in detail what this plot point meant, but I can't tell you what the name of Kirk's love interest from the third episode was.
Well, long story short, I think the MC ended up feeling bad for me.
Oh.
And so now we got a pity review on iTunes that came from the guy at my bar who does
Really?
trivia night.
That's funny. That's actually, I think we had like a bunch of reviews, but then like we had to switch iTunes
Yeah.
feeds, so we don't have any of those. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Good for you, Grace. Good for you.
Way to lose.
Your loss is our gain.
I know. I know.
So,
I suffer for this show so much.
my apologies for the short show, but we're having a bunch of problems, and we just ran out of time, and because David couldn't be here, this is just what's going to happen. So I hope you enjoyed this, especially that really cool email that we got from Mares.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for bearing with us.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun talking about those two episodes, Melora and Observer Effect.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And next week, we will be talking about Star Trek Into Darkness.
Hell or high water, we will.
So if you haven't seen it by then, which I understand, you know, sometimes you don't see it in the first week, I would recommend skipping that episode and maybe coming back to it later. Because this is not a review to try to get you to see or not see the movie, because I just sort of assume if you're listening to this podcast, you probably made up your own mind on that.
Nah, pirate it for all we care.
Yeah, this is just me and Grace and David will be talking about how we feel about that movie.
We're going to be talking about our feelings.
And if you haven't seen it, you're not going to get any of the context.
Yep.
So with that in mind, if you feel like emailing us, go ahead, email us at allthingstrek@hotmail.com. I've already got an email from Data Logan about the movie that may actually be too long to read. So so we'll see how that works out.
All right. See you next week, everybody.
Yep. And we promise we'll be live next week. So until then, this is All Things Trek signing off.
Mwah.